Welcome back. It's a Monday, the 5th day of November, 2018. I'm your host, Mark Call, and I suspect everybody listening knows what that means. It's T-minus 1 day until Tuesday, November 6th, and what is almost universally, even by the fake news, being called the most important election in American history, because it'll decide whether or not the manipulation is sufficient to overcome all of those people who've had it up to here with the communist insurgency. But maybe that's your cynical host putting it slightly differently than you're going to hear from CNN. And as you might suspect, unless we see yet one more last-minute false flag, there's very little other news that's going to be talked about too much today, although we'll do our best during this half hour not to ignore that either, which kind of inclines your host to agree with the sentiments of the 5-minute forecast, which wrote, as of Monday morning, they've tried to keep the 5 a blessedly midterm free zone so far this fall. Yes, they admit they have been all over the cannabis referenda in 4 different states, because they're about investments and stock picks, after all. But they say we've tried to tune out the partisan food fight surrounding the congressional contest, and especially the media hype about that most important midterm in pick your interval, because that's exactly what we heard about the midterm in 2014 and 2010 and 2006. But still, on the eve of Election Day, it's time to try to grit our teeth, tighten the stomach muscles, and look at the implications. They quote one of their contributors, economist Jim Rickards, who says, "The question I'm asked most frequently these days involves the midterms. Will the blue wave drown Trump's efforts to save, he says, reform America? Or will a red wave rise to counter that blue wave?" And as your host likes to remark, "and the real election manipulation that dwarfs anything the dreaded Ruskies ever attempted." And besides, folks, why would they need to invest too much effort, since the commies at the New York Times, the WAPO, CNN, and their ilk are pretty much doing the work for them? They do claim that a casual glance, at least at the waste-stream media headlines, will tell you that, especially if you're a conservative, don't bother to vote because it's all over. The Republicans will probably hang on to the Senate by their fingernails, but the communists, a.k.a. Democrats, are a lead pipe cinch to take the House. And that again reveals why it is that the media universally chose not to call the Democrats the Red Party, because a red wave overtaking America would be just too darn obvious now, wouldn't it? Anyway, back to Jim Rickards, who says, regarding that question he keeps getting asked, quote, "There is no blue wave, there's no red wave. What we have is a very tight horse race that'll come down to the wire. If the Democrats do take the House," he says, "it'll be by just a few seats, but if the Republicans hang on, likewise, it'll be by the skin of their teeth. But if you scratch him a bit more," they note, "he'll stick his neck out and tell you, look for a surprise Republican victory." And to make a long story short, folks, that's obviously because if we've been watching the polls over the last few years, and especially how badly they blew it, predicting that Hillary, without a doubt, would march to the crown she so richly deserved, we know they lie. Jim Rickards reprises the how of it. "They're more helpful," he said, meaning the polls, "for spotting trends and predicting outcomes, but they do have many flaws. Pollsters tend to obscure the differences among, quote, all voters, registered voters, and likely voters, whenever it suits their purposes. Only polls with likely voters should be given much weight," he says. "Even then, the likely category is probably derived from a baseline of past elections, such as 2012, that may not be indicative, and that might be by design," your host says, "of how likely voters will vote now. Pollsters also," he continues, "tend to overweight Democrats relative to Republicans and overweight African Americans within that Democrat sample. Furthermore, they do a poor job of getting through to people who use cell phones, and they can't properly estimate the actions of those who won't answer the phones at all. And finally, many voters have learned not to give truthful answers to pollsters. They may have a view, but they're reluctant or perhaps even embarrassed to state that to a stranger, who probably will berate them, since they know it's likely a Democrat on the other end of the phone." And finally, says Rickards, "none of the polls can estimate actual turnout, which is the most important variable of all." Well, folks, here, your host will say it again, I don't think Jim Rickards is quite as cynical as those of us who have been really watching how the statistics have been getting manipulated, because the most important variable of all is how much the riggers think they can get away with, and how good of a job they do, using those same polls, of greasing the skids and convincing people to accept the numbers they're working so hard to trot out. Now, I do notice the 5-minute forecast trots out a quote from one of my very favorite authors, their founder, Bill Bonner, who responds to a claim as of Saturday afternoon by self-proclaimed expert Nate Silver, who had a respectable record of predicting Democrat victories up until Election Eve 2016, who says Democrats stand an 85.4% chance of winning the House. And as Bonner notes, lies, damn lies, and of course statistics deserve increasing suspicion with the addition of every single decimal point. And while I'm still thinking about polls, folks, I did see this interesting piece, courtesy of the Rasmussen Reports, which says that Republican voters don't tend to show their hand to pollsters. Just as in 2016, they write, Democrats are more outspoken about how they're going to vote in the upcoming elections than Republicans and unaffiliated voters are. Why, as you know, some of them may even hit you over the head with something if they don't like your answer. I put that in there, of course. The latest Rasmussen Reports, it says, National Telephone and Online Survey, finds that 60% of, here it is, likely Democrat voters say they're more likely to let others know how they intend to vote this year compared to previous congressional elections, comparing to only 49% of Republicans and 40% of unaffiliated voters. And that's even more than in the ill-fated election of 2016. Where they admit that, quote, some analysts, both before and after Donald Trump's upset victory, suggested that most pollsters missed his hidden support among voters fearful of criticism who were unwilling to say where they stood. And as commenters looking at the piece have noted, you betcha, Democrats certainly are more willing to talk, and they do seem to be a bit more divorced from reality besides. They're also evidently more willing to intimidate. I did see a piece from Jim Hoft at the Gateway Pundit up this morning entitled Vote or Die. It's got a picture of a bunch of Black Panthers campaigning for Democrat Stacey Adams in Georgia over the weekend, armed with AK-47s. Because, says the caption, nothing says get out the vote like a few big guns. And what do you bet, says your increasingly cynical host as the election eve is upon us, that if these had been, oh, I don't know, anybody that could have been mislabeled white supremacists instead, that this would have been the headline all over CNN, MSNBC, and the WAPO. And speaking of Georgia, this kind of fleshes out that same equation. Georgia is investigating Democrats, as a summary piece from Zero Hedge, for allegedly hacking, what, again? The voting system there. 2 days before the November 6th midterm, it says, Georgia Secretary of State and Republican gubernatorial candidate Brian Kemp revealed on Sunday that his office is opening an investigation into the Georgia Democratic Party on allegations that it's attempted to hack the state's voting system, including allegations of possible cyber crimes. Yes, as you might suspect, people on both sides of the aisle are squealing like stuck pigs. It's certainly not the first time we've heard similar allegations, though, and there's more than a little evidence to suggest they may have some substance. Says Zero Hedge in conclusion, for many Georgia voters, though, news of this investigation will not be taken lightly. According to a poll conducted by the AJC, you may have heard of that paper that some have called the Atlanta Urinal and Constipation, and a local TV station, many voters in the state are now concerned about the integrity of its elections, including fears about tampering and ineligible voters, who could have thought it, casting ballots. Well, since there's no shortage, folks, of predictions on this day before the election, I saw these from Doomer Doug McIntosh about what he called the Trump election tsunami and thought there were at least a few interesting comments in here worth reading. Ignoring the likes of Nate Silver, he suggests that the Democrats are going to be crushed come poll closure on Tuesday, and that, in fact, the Republicans will hold both the House and the Senate because of that invasion caravan approaching the southern U.S. border. Call it yet another George Soros backfire, perhaps. The other reason is a story that I haven't mentioned yet, but I will right now. More and more Kavanaugh accusers turn out to be liars. Oops, I'm sorry. I hope you were sitting down for that one. Even though this show tipped off a lot of folks on that score late last week. Another Kavanaugh accuser admits to having fabricated a rape story, said the Washington Times coverage. She made up the lurid tale, saying it was a tactic to try to derail the judge's confirmation. It didn't work. And she's now the second Kavanaugh accuser to admit she lied. Imagine that. But wait a minute, folks. Come to think of it, it does put her way out ahead of the Obamas and Hitlers of the world, at least. And more on that score in a minute, but let's get back to Doomer Doug's predictions. Yes, he says conservatives are pouring out to vote for those two reasons alone. Granted, the Democrats are up to their old Soros-funded vote fraud campaign, but the red wave, he believes, is now a tidal one, which is, of course, what your host has suggested all along it'll take in order to overcome the built-in fraud factor. The House, he admits, will likely have fewer Republicans, but they will in fact keep the 218 needed for a majority. Meanwhile, though, the U.S. Senate will be a massacre for the Democrats because the red tide, says Doomer Doug, will result in something like 60 Republicans. Yes, he says, the new Senate will be between 59 to 60 Republicans versus 38 Democrats and the alleged independent socialist Bernie Sanders. And here's why. The current Senate, 51 Republicans and 49 Democrats, consists of 10 seats up for election that are held by Democrats in states taken by Trump in 2016. Three Senate seats, North Dakota, Missouri, and West Virginia, are now held by Democrats who for sure will lose, while four more Senate seats are held by Democrats likely to lose, including New Jersey, Indiana, Nevada, and Montana, leading to a gain of 7, resulting in 57 Republicans in the Senate. Meanwhile, though, the Senate seat in Arizona, held by Rhino, sellout, and McCain wannabe Jeff Flake, is another seat that goes from a never-Trumper Rhino to an actual Trump supporter. And furthermore, there are multiple seats now held by Democrats in the Senate that Republicans could take if things go well. The reason, he writes, is something that others have remarked on as well. Before the brutal attacks on Kavanaugh, the lies, and the circus, the base, he says, wasn't fired up. But, like many others, he's been watching people change their mind and seeing the Marxist Democrats go full, I guess I can't say this here, well, you know what they've been doing, and combining that with a military invasion of the United States from the South, funded by Soros and designed to overthrow the USA, as in sedition, the election has changed radically. Says Doomer Doug, Trump has played the Democrats brilliantly and routinely allowed them to slit their own throats. So attitudes changed, his along with them. If you'd asked me a month or two ago, he writes, whether the Republicans were going to be able to pick up New Jersey, Ohio, North Dakota, Missouri, and all the rest of the Democrat seats, plus keep, or allegedly anyway, keep Arizona, Nevada, and Texas, I'd have said no way. But now I think Trump is going to, quote, run the table and get them all. Still, the socialists are relying on voter fraud, corruption, registering illegals et al., but it simply won't be enough. So he says, now I think Trump's going to run the table and get them all. And since we've already talked today about voter fraud in Georgia and AK-47s on parade, or is it just leftist gun control hypocrisy gone wild, it's interesting to do a bit of compare and contrast with a massive crowd that came for Trump's late election push in Georgia, according to a Jeff Poor story from Breitbart yesterday. Dateline Macon, Georgia, it says, it was a rally like no other in Peach State history for a midterm, where literally thousands lined up hours early to see Trump make his closing argument for Georgia Republican gubernatorial nominee Brian Kemp, who faces socialist Stacey Adams tomorrow. The pictures of the crowd, folks, and yes, they're taken with a wide-angle lens, not to try to obscure how many were really there, are downright dramatic. As a matter of fact, one of my favorite aggregators, Holly Deo, writing on the situation, said that President Trump actually asked the media that was covering the event 4 times to turn their cameras around so the audience could see the thousands of people in attendance. But they refused and then got roundly booed by that same huge crowd. There was an equally impressive crowd lining up in Chattanooga, Tennessee, after the Georgia event. And as Doomer Doug noted in his piece, while Trump has been kicking you-know-what at his rallies, Obama has been in full whiny brat mode, and the contrast couldn't be more stark. We'll come back to that in just a minute, folks, because he's exactly right. The president outlined his accomplishments and then even went on to say that, quote, to protect your rights and freedoms, we overcame the Democrat smear campaign and confirmed Justice Brett Kavanaugh to the United States Supreme Court. He, too, pointed out that the latest liar to be revealed accused Kavanaugh of, quote, horrible, horrible crimes, and then actually admitted she never met Judge Kavanaugh or Brett Kavanaugh or Kavanaugh, period. Never met him, never saw him, and the act never happened, and it was a lie. It was a total lie, he said. She made up the story, and she was forced to admit it, unquote. And that, folks, may be at the root of what's now being revealed, and why it's such a good thing that so many Americans seem to be finally tuning into it. So without further ado, let's do the compare and contrast. A confession as I begin this next segment. I really hate listening to this guy. But I don't like to listen to Adolf Hitler speeches or read Mein Kampf either. Still, though, sometimes you have to, because those who don't know history and learn from it, as you know, are condemned to repeat it. And if you really want to understand the lie, you'd better understand the liars. So here next, thanks to the AmericanMirror.com, some excerpts from a speech given over the weekend by one of the most evil men still drawing breath in the formerly free republics, and he has a lot to do with that. Former president, you know, the guy with so many aliases, who was stumping in Miami, Florida, with Senator Bill Nelson for their communist candidate for governor, Andrew Gillum, probably one of the truly worst of the worst, where, says the story, the former president tried his best to deliver a home-run speech before the midterm elections Tuesday. So brace yourself. We'll take it in pieces, bit by lying bit. And interestingly, the headline from the American Mirror calls this one Obama Unhinged, as he mocks just about everything that this election is really about in under 90 seconds.
In 2010, they said that Bill and I, we were setting up death panels to kill your grandma. Remember that?
Actually, Barry, it was death panels to kill all of us that don't go along with your party line. Thankfully, that got stopped, and you know how. But we're still hearing the calls for violence now, aren't we? And they've hardly given up the attacks on what he calls us bitter clingers, you know, who still believe in some other god besides the one that he sees in the mirror, and insist on clinging to our Bibles and guns and, yeah, God-given rights. But notice, folks, he doesn't mention this one. Let's go into the archives and see if we can't recall it for ourselves, though.
If you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. If you like your private health insurance plan, you can keep your plan. Period.
Remember that?
Yep, yep. Well, they may not, but we sure do.
In 2014, they said, Ebola's going to kill all of us. Shut the borders.
No, there were a whole lot of other diseases, too, coming across the border. And yeah, they're still a problem. And while he's trying to distract all of us from it, there were a whole lot of good reasons besides disease for shutting down Obama's migrant invasion.
In 2016, it was Hillary's emails. They were all wound up about that. And the mainstream press picked up on it. This is terrible. This is a breach of security. You know they don't care about that.
Because if they did, folks, they wouldn't have covered it up during the election. And they wouldn't be letting this lying scumbag get away with stuff like this now.
They said it to get folks angry and ginned up. Now in 2018, they're telling you the existential threat to America is a bunch of poor refugees 1,000 miles away.
And maybe here, folks, he's almost right, because the bigger threat are all of those wannabe terrorists that Obama already let in, gave bus tickets to, and are now scattered all over the place, already committing rape, murder, robbery, and mayhem. Some of those, though, have been deported, and a lot of them are already back in the caravan, heading north again. But the real whopper here is that there hasn't already been a heck of a lot of damage already done, with many terrorists already in place, ready and awaiting further orders. And the companion whoppers that the multiple mercenary migrant invasion caravans, plural, mind you, aren't the first waves of something intended to be much bigger. Call it a beta test of how it is you can invade a formerly sovereign country even more openly than Obama already tried to get away with. Although you do have to admit, it's a very cleverly designed catch-22. Heads I win, tails you lose. Especially if they manage to sacrifice a few pawns on the border for saturation press coverage. But this last one may be the most unconscionable whopper of a huge lie of all, even for multiple alias Barry Sabarco, Barry Sotero.
They're even taking our brave troops away from their families for a political stunt at the border.
Now, wait a minute. Does he mean the Syrian border, the Afghanistan border, or the one that the actual Constitution says we're supposed to defend? And when it comes to taking troops away from their families and sacrificing them outright, you have to admit, on the political stunt scale, this guy probably is the true master. Let's hear this berry-faced lie again.
They're even taking our brave troops away from their families for a political stunt at the border. And the men and women of our military deserve better than that.
They sure as hell do. And thank God, America may be waking up to what that really means. And as we shift gears now to some of the other news that I promised we'd eventually get around to, I do want to note this piece, courtesy of French sources and the aggregators at Zero Hedge, which says that for the first time, Marine Le Pen, the closest thing they have to a conservative, and probably the Trump of France besides, leads Macron, according to the latest polls there. It's not that the communist French President Macron didn't already have abysmal approval ratings, it says, and they've fallen precipitously this year following an exodus of cabinet officials, tone-deaf messaging over the president's lavish lifestyle, controversial, to put it mildly, immigration policies, and a scandal involving brutality by a Macron bodyguard and confidant. So, yeah, things are looking bad for their communist, putting him on a pace to eventually match the single-digit approval ratings enjoyed by his predecessor, socialist François Hollande, which inspired that guy not to seek a second term. And get this, this is the first time that what the French press call her far-right party has overtaken Macron's centrist movement in the polls. And that, too, speaks volumes. So, looking ahead, say those same folks at Zero Hedge, politics will no doubt be the primary focus for markets during the big week ahead, full of potentially major developments. What with the U.S. midterms at the forefront, President Trump's also due to meet with that same French President Macron, as well as Russia's Putin, while in Germany, the retreat of their globalist CDU party may provide an update on future leadership. Sick. We also have a Fed meeting to look forward to, global PMI data, U.S. PPI data, we can't trust any of that, of course, Chinese trade and inflation data, and more corporate earnings scheduled. Here's the other big non-election economic and geopolitical news today. The U.S. has reinstated sanctions on Iran, even though 8 waivers are supposed to be announced shortly. Those sanctions, announced at midnight, will impact more than 700, quote, individuals, entities, vessels, and aircraft, according to the White House, and they will include Iranian banks, oil companies, and shipping firms. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin said the U.S. is, quote, intent on ensuring that global funds stop flowing to the coffers of the Iranian regime, while the White House says it's still open to renegotiating a deal. Meanwhile, though, and some of us would say, gee, no surprise here, the administration has opted to allow Iran to remain connected, at least for now, to the U.S.-dominated international payments scheme known as SWIFT. Some reaction, though, as expected, was also swift. Iran's most powerful hardline Islamic cleric has announced that if oil exports are halted, Saudi Arabian tankers will be confiscated and Gulf countries attacked. Basically, he threatened to instantly create $400 per barrel oil. And as the U.S. government reinstated those energy and banking sanctions against Tehran on Monday, said Russian source Sputnik News, Iranian President Hassan Rouhani has vowed that Tehran will continue to sell oil despite the, quote, illegal and unjust sanctions reimposed by the United States. And then another obviously very much related story, Russia and China are considering, as if they weren't already actually well underway, bilateral trade in national currencies, meaning the ruble and yuan, in order to cut their dependence on the almighty fiat dollar. Ahead of upcoming high-profile meetings, their first deputy chief of staff, Sergei Prikhodko, told reporters this was an urgent task. Quote, due to the U.S. sanctions, it's essential to have new mechanisms to conduct mutual settlements between the economic entities of both countries. So we'll wrap up this pre-election summary with two more bits of follow-the-money news. Zero Hedge says that the Treasury is set to sell a record amount of U.S. debt this week, with yields on the verge of a major breakout. Selling a whopping $83 billion real soon now at Treasury note and bond auctions, surpassing the all-time high refunding total set by Timmy Geithner back in 2009. Meanwhile, says King World News, Egon von Greyers, legendary for his QE and currency move predictions, continues to warn investors to prepare for the biggest destruction of wealth in history and also the biggest wealth transfer. In a world based on fake money and fake assets, he writes, the real significance of real money, like gold and silver, may have gotten lost, but gold is the only money that's survived throughout history. And it's frustrating to see price discovery foiled by a fake paper market hundreds of times bigger than the physical available to cover the outstanding commitments. But inevitably, when the chickens come home to roost, all hell will break loose in the gold market, and gold will go no offer, he says, meaning there will be no physical gold available at any price. And the longer it takes, the bigger that move will be. And however things work out tomorrow, folks, we're growing closer to that event by the day. And may Yahuwah bless you and yours.